Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. The Declaration of Independence refers to indigenous people as merciless Indian savages. It's safe to say that we didn't have a good relationship with the American government before or after that time. But American patriotism in Native America does exist, and it's a complex thing. It was indoctrinated through boarding schools and other assimilationist policies of the U.S. government. We'll discuss the history and complexities of Native patriotism after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Catholic priest in Ontario has resigned over comments he made about the good done in residential schools. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the Archdiocese of Toronto apologized for the remarks.
Owen Keenan was the pastor of the Merciful Redeemer Parish in Mississauga, just west of Toronto. He was criticized in June for a sermon in which he talked about Canada's residential school system. Part of Keenan's sermon was posted online.
Now, I presume that the same number would thank the church for the good that was done in those schools. But of course, that question was never asked. And in fact, we're not allowed even to say that good was done in those schools.
Those comments were widely criticized. Here's Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie.
His comments show a fundamental misunderstanding of one of the core tragedies of the residential school system in Canada. The children were forcibly separated from their parents. For the first time, we are truly confronting our history and learning the truth about what really happened.
In a statement, Keenan apologized and acknowledged the pain and anger which has been magnified by his comments. He also pledged to do better. He also said, as a Catholic and a priest, he does not condone the residential school system, and he regrets deeply that those schools existed. Cardinal Thomas Collins of the Archdiocese of Toronto accepted Keenan's resignation. Keenan is now on an indefinite leave of absence. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
This week, an Indigenous nonprofit in Montana announced participants for an intergenerational program to preserve knowledge between tribal elders and young Indigenous women. Yellowstone Public Radio's Taylor Stagner has more on the effort to preserve Indigenous knowledge.
The Spirit Aligned Leadership Program will have 21 Indigenous women work on projects in their tribal communities from all over the U.S. and Canada. Gail Small is the Intergenerational Indigenous Women's Fellowship Program Director. She says that the oldest Indigenous women in the program are in their 80s.
One of the women, the elder woman, said, this will be my last big effort. They're reflecting back on their life. And they're intentionally choosing what knowledge they are going to pass on. And they live that knowledge. So it's not like they're writing a book or doing a video.
Spirit Aligned Leadership Program is one of the only nonprofits in the U.S. that focuses on knowledge sharing for Indigenous women. Small says that Indigenous knowledge is precious, and with COVID-19 taking the lives of many Indigenous elders, Spirit Aligned wanted to work fast to preserve Indigenous ways of being.
We quickly realized the loss of tribal elders. Like in my tribe alone, we lost over 60 elders. And we were seeing impacts just rolling through tribal communities.
The pairings will work on projects that align with the elders' interests and life's work, including mapping stars for ceremony, language revitalization efforts, and Indigenous food sovereignty. For National Native News, I'm Taylor Stagner.
Native organizations say Thursday's U.S. Supreme Court decision, which upheld two Arizona voting policies, make it harder for people of color, especially Native Americans, to vote. It also makes it harder to bring claims under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which has been used to protect Native voters from laws making it difficult to vote. The Native American Rights Fund and the National Congress of American Indians had filed an amicus brief to address barriers and advocate for Native voters. Tribal leaders in Arizona have opposed a number of measures presented this year in the state they say will limit turnout in elections and disproportionately impact Native voters. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Trickster Cultural Center and American Indian Veterans welcome all veterans to reconnect in unity. The 7th Annual National Gathering and Powwow of American Indian Veterans at Cantigny Park, Wheaton, Illinois, July 16th to the 18th. TricksterCulturalCenter.org supports this show.
Support by BNSF Railway, proudly supporting the nation's economy by moving the goods that feed, supply, and power communities across the country. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. The American government has a documented history of racism, violence, forced assimilation, and theft when it comes to Native Americans. Still, many Native people remain very patriotic. Statistically, we enlist in the military at higher rates than other Americans. Military service helps promote patriotism for other aspects of American institutions in Native communities. At the same time, many Native people hold contempt for the systems and policies that have worked against them for so long. So, before we start this Independence Day weekend, we're going to discuss patriotism in Native America. We're marking the signing of the Declaration of Independence, which referred to Native people as merciless Indian savages. Join us by calling 1-800-996-2848. As an Indigenous person, how do you define patriotism? Do you make a distinction between military service and other American institutions? Again, our number is 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is Dr. Jennifer Danette Dale. She's a historian and professor and chair of American Studies at the University of New Mexico, and she is Dene. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Dr. Danette Dale, and please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Oh, thank you, Monica. I am Dene. I am Ogedo Ashihin Bashishin, Kilichini Dasha Che To Hedlini Dashinala, without AS Dunishle.
Thank you for that. I appreciate it. So I've been thinking a lot about this topic and just how complex it is. You know, there's a profound appreciation for our land that we have. And I think that what comes with that is a lot of folks in Native America wanted to defend that land, which means signing up for the military. But at the same time, we are having a reckoning in this country. A conversation about the realities of how this country came to be. And so I wanted to know, you know, what you've been thinking about these two sort of parallel ideas.
Well, I want to start with a circular that was sent out by Commissioner of Indian Affairs Thomas J. Morgan in December 1889. And this is a circular that reads, instructions to Indian agents in regard to inculcation of patriotism in Indian schools. And he says, he writes to Indian agents and superintendents of Indian schools, the great purpose which the government has in view in providing an ample system of common school education for all Indian youth of school age is the preparation of them for American citizenship. The Indians are destined to become absorbed into national life, not as Indians, but as Americans. They are to share with their fellow citizens in all the rights and privileges and are likewise to be called upon to bear fully their share of all the duties and responsibilities involved in American citizenship. And then he goes on to talk about how, gives recommendations on how to inculcate Indian children with a sense of patriotism to the United States, which includes singing patriotic songs, having them celebrate national holidays like Washington's birthday, Decoration Day, 4th of July, Thanksgiving, Christmas. And all of this is intended to inculcate Native children with a sense of patriotism to the United States. So boarding schools, as you mentioned, was a source for instilling a sense of patriotism. Patriotism is about
creating a sense of loyalty to, in this case, the United States, creating a national consciousness of belonging. And of course, patriotism is really about emotions. Okay? It pulls at our emotions and makes us want to be a part of a nation. You also mentioned, my next point is, what's wrong with this? Okay? As we can see across the United the American landscape for the past few years, there's lots that is wrong. And so I think this is an opportunity to also raise questions. As we've noted in the American landscape for the past few years, especially in the wake of COVID-19, racial inequality is made stark. Gender inequalities remain. Indigenous people are at the forefront of protecting the land and the theft of resources like water. And they have received some of the most brutal punitive punishment under law enforcement in this country. It remains that to be indigenous in this country is criminalized. Okay? And yet, as we can see by the ongoing resistance, the determination to remain indigenous, and in my case, Diné, remains.
And not to simplify it too much, but folks may hold those ideas in their head and understand them and still, you know, this weekend want to celebrate with fireworks, with a family gathering and a meal and things like that. And I want to hear from our listeners, what do you think about that? Do you have a sense of loyalty to the United States? Do you have a longing for the truth to come out? And what are your plans for the 4th of July? Are you going to celebrate it? Are you going to celebrate it with a lecture to your family about what the truth about this country really is? We want to hear. All opinions are welcome. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Dr. Diné Dale, you reminded me of when I was in grad school. I was at UNM as well, studying in the language, literacy, and sociocultural studies department. And we learned all about boarding schools. And I remember reading these books that were, they were like coloring books, I think. And there was one specifically for Navajos that had this Navajo person, and it said, "I stare at the flag and I think of this country, and I'm thankful for this country," things like that. And I remember just reading that and thinking, like, wow, like the era of extermination, you know, didn't work entirely, right? And so then comes the era of assimilation. And the efforts, the many multi-layered efforts to get Native people to get with the program, basically. Can you share some other ways that maybe in particular in your tribe, assimilation was the efforts to assimilate were pretty evident?
You know, I think that it's multi-layered in terms of this pull to encourage a disappearance into the mainstream of the United States. That is the history of the United States. And it's not, it's always extermination. You know, we just call it different things, but extermination also means the ways in which we become more and more perhaps distant from our original sense of belonging to the land and connected to the land and a network of kinship, you know. And so it moves across multiple layers, I think. And yet somehow we continue to foster a critical consciousness that challenges and refuses the kind of nationalistic belonging that the U.S. Actively foments.
What do you know about, you know, in the Declaration of Independence where it said merciless Indian savages?
That was actually, you know, it hasn't changed now. Those words of savage, merciless savage, has developed and moved into stereotypes and racist images of Indigenous people that are intended to make us look fierce and unable to transform. And so that conversation, that kind of dialogue, that kind of understanding remains within the national consciousness of this country. And you can see that with the treatment of the water protectors at Standing Rock and what's happening now at Pipeline Number 3. You know, it hasn't changed. The forms of exterminating Indigenous people perhaps becomes a little bit gentler than just outright massacres.
Mm. Yeah, I want to throw that out there to our listeners, too. If you're a history buff, what do you know about the Declaration of Independence and the phrase in there? I think that it had to do with complaining about the how the British Empire was not protecting colonists against the merciless Indian savages. I believe that's what it was in there. And so call us, share what you know. Also, let us know, what are you doing for the 4th? Are you celebrating? Are you thinking about some of these topics that we're talking about here? 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Dr. Dinetdale, we're just about to go to a break. I just want to ask you if you could define what you think it means to be patriotic today.
Well, you know, I'm not someone who displays a sense of patriotism to the U.S. When 9/11 happened, I was on my way to a class to do a presentation at Northern Arizona University, and that news struck of the attack on the United States in New York with the Twin Towers, and I was immediately asking questions about why there was an attack, who conducted the attack, and then I watched the landscape, the American landscape, including Navajo people, who were just like heightened patriotism to the U.S.
Yeah. Hang on one second. I want to talk more about that, but we're going to go to a break. If you're thinking about patriotism today and you want to weigh in on that, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also tweet us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We'll be right back. There's no let-up in the backlash against what's sometimes called critical race theory. Elected leaders across the country are proposing laws and classroom changes that aim to weaken instruction about America's racist past. On our next Native America Calling, we'll offer an encore of our show on how America learns about their racist past. We hope you can join us.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on StrongHeartsHelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, sitting in for Tara Gatewood. We're focusing on the complexities of Native American patriotism. Given our historical relationship with the American government, how does patriotism show up in your Native community, in your family? There's still time. Join the conversation. The number is 1-800-996-2848. Dr. Jennifer Dinetdale is with us. She's a historian and professor and chair of American Studies at the University of New Mexico. And before the break, I asked Dr. Dinetdale what it means to be patriotic today. And you were sharing about your thoughts on 9/11. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that on the day that happened, I was on my way to classroom at NAU, and I immediately had questions, you know, many, many questions. I also observed my own Diné with this incredible display of patriotism to the U.S. And I've always had a sense of a consciousness about these contradictions, particularly for Dene'en indigenous peoples, when we've been treated so horribly, genocidal practices of the United States, boarding schools are ethnic cleansing, forms of ethnic cleansing, and yet some of us still have that sense of loyalty to the U.S. And so in my work, in my scholarship, I've tried very hard to understand those contradictions. Being a historian, you then begin to, when you study the past, not just of the United States, but of indigenous people and Dene'en, you begin to discern patterns, you know, patterns of practice, and how those, particularly how patriotism and these displays like July 4th really are intended to veil critical questions of disparity, racial inequalities, gender inequalities, and the ongoing dispossession of indigenous peoples.
And I think we're seeing a little bit of this conversation going on in Canada right now, you know, where so many Canada Day events were canceled because of the absolutely heartbreaking news of, you know, unmarked graves, several unmarked graves of boarding school students being found across the country. I'm wondering, Dr. Dene'en Del, if you're seeing, you know, if you want to compare the reckoning that we're having here in this country to what's going on in Canada right now.
I've been watching and paying attention. I don't say much about it because the mourning and the grief is just so palpable that there isn't any words for me right now to talk about what we've always known as Indigenous people. You know, I don't know any Indigenous person who hasn't spoken of these experiences of their relatives, of children and people who didn't come home. Mm. And so the grief is just it's palatable. And I think in the in Canada, the Indigenous people have responded in a very more direct way with their demands and their challenges. You look at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And we don't have anything akin to that here in the United States. Historians in American history, that was one of their first topics, was Indian education. And, of course, starting in mostly in the late 50s, 60s, particularly 60s and 70s, the examinations of the Indian schools was really sanitized, denied by American historians, you know. And so we also reckon with that because we have to come to our own terms and we have to articulate our understanding and move away from that American historiography. And so there's a very different response, I think, compared to what's happening in Canada right now.
Yeah, I think so, too. Particularly when you have, you know, the U.S. government won't even use the word genocide to describe what actually happened here. And I think that this country probably isn't going to end up in the same progress as Canada until that word starts getting used more freely. Let's take a call. We've got Melvin in Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Hey there, Melvin. What do you want to share?
Well, first of all, I'm a savage. I would like to talk about the patriotism of today. You know, we look at what happened on January 6th, and we had President Trump call those guys true patriots and, you know, bragged them all up as patriots of the United States. And if I acted like that, I'd be sitting in a federal prison somewhere, you know. I acted like those patriots. But today, you know, with this, the political actions going on by one party, and it's creating non-Indians are more patriotic than us, you know, motivated, you know, a racial thing, the Republican Party. And, you know, that's not right. Our people served in every war in mass numbers, you know, and also that Constitution, we contributed contributed heavily into that making of that. They went up and looked at the Iroquois, how they governed their South, and they copied a lot of it, left a lot of parts out, mainly about the role of women, because at that time, white people, white men were in charge, and still are, you know. But they cut all that, the women, out too at that time. But our people are patriots. We are. I hope we don't act like these new patriots out there I've seen on January 6th. But that's all the comment I'd like to say.
Oh, Melvin, great to hear from you. Always nice to hear you tuning in. In Santee, Nebraska, tuned in on KZYK. Dr. Dinetdale, do you want to talk about that contradiction, you know, of what Melvin said if he was at the Capitol on January 6th, how he'd be in federal prison?
I one of the things that I do want to say that I think is it's always been crucial, and I think it's even more crucial to teach our children and our students the significance of Indigenous nations. You know, our nations predate foreign invasions of our lands. Our nations predate the invasion of and occupancy of the American government. And in these questions and these focus on American patriotism, we often forget our own traditional principles and our own forms of governance that predate. And so when these kinds of questions come about patriotism, I don't find patriotism to the United States, I don't find them particularly interesting or compelling. I'm interested in how do we continue to foster in our own children, in our own people, a sense of belonging to our respective Indigenous nations. And that's a really crucial question. Mm. We continue to remain Indigenous in spite of American imperialism. And American imperialism began with its treatment of Indigenous people.
Do you consider yourself a citizen of the United States, Dr. Dinetto?
I consider myself a citizen of the Navajo Nation, and I consider myself a relative in a network of a matrilineal-based network of Diné, and a Diné woman before I consider myself a citizen of the United States. I see what has happened at Standing Rock. I see the brutality rained upon my people because they dare to call the water a relative, you know, and those things those things are the things that matter, I think.
Mm. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. I want to add some more citizens of Native Nations to our conversation. Joining us from Ogopogi is Dr. Christina M. Castro. She's the co-founder of the Three Sisters Collective, and she's Taos Pueblo, Jemez Pueblo, and Chicana. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Christina.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us from Washington, D.C. is Nikki Petrie. She's the executive director of the Center for Native American Youth at the Aspen Institute, and she's Coeur d'Alene. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Nikki, and please feel free to introduce yourself. All right. Thank you so much, Nikki. It's always great to hear our native languages on our airwaves. Christina, let's start with you. I wonder if you might want to comment on what Melvin shared about, the idea of who is patriotic these days, whether it's the folks who are storming the Capitol on January 6th or people who are holding their country accountable and asking these tough questions and talking about past genocidal acts.
Well, I definitely think patriotism has been racialized in the new American construct. I think that we've seen over the last several years with the previous presidential administration and how that's been used as a tool to generate, like, the masses of those types of folks, the QAnoners and those who storm the Capitol. I think, you know, we want to think of those folks as fringe, but it seems to me like that subgroup is growing. I know recently, I think last weekend, somebody alerted me to the fact that there was a huge mob of quote-unquote patriots driving up I-25 between Albuquerque and Santa Fe. So they were indigenous people were giving each other a heads up that this caravan of like 20-plus cars with those yellow Do Not Tread on Me flags were coming through town. I don't know if they were going up to Red River or where the Texans all mobilize up north. But I think it's a little bit disturbing that this is the trend in I guess, white America. I'm worried as an indigenous person, as an indigenous activist. Over the last year, the heightened threats against indigenous people, indigenous women, especially speaking as an activist in Santa Fe, working around the removal of the racist monuments and obelisks here in our town. It's almost dangerous, as Dr. Dennett Dale said, to speak out as indigenous people against the injustices of the past. I think there is a certain construct of respectability politics around American Indian identity. I think that was heavily enforced during our parents and grandparents era, this whole idea of patriotism, being a good American, being a good Indian, which means basically, you know, that's a real small box you can fit into. You can smile, you can dance, you can sell artistry, but if you step out of the box of their respectability politics, then you become, as Dr. Dennett Dale said, you're an enemy of the state. To be indigenous in this country is to be criminalized. We are unfortunately delegated to what Dr. Dennett Dale said is we're unable to transform in the settler colonial construct. And so I think it's really important that as much as we look into the past and the atrocities of the past that are being uncovered literally, I think it's very important that we not lose sight of today and now and the work that needs to be done to get us to the indigenous futurisms that were many, many amazing indigenous excellence is being displayed in my community. And I don't want us to lose focus on the future that we're creating for our children and our children's children so that these things cannot happen again to our communities. And I think if you look at the history of the settler colonial project, the root of it has always been the breakdown of the family structure for Indigenous and Black people. So the more we can work in our communities to rebuild not only ourselves and our heart, but to learn to love again, and to grow that love, that's the anti-venom to the settler colonial project, which will never see us as humans, which will never recognize our indigenous excellence.
Christina, let me ask you this, though. If you're fighting against the settler colonial project, is there a space for honoring our military veterans within that?
Yeah, absolutely. I have taken the stance of accepting the era of highly assimilated indigenous folks. There was an era of high patriotism where they did directly recruit in our communities for the military. I mean, that still happens. And so I would never, ever disrespect the effort and the time spent of the indigenous folks that have participated in military service. We honor those veterans. We honor their sacrifice. But as we move into a more critical time and more of us become educated and astute in the ways of the system, I think we'll continue to critique that system, but with no disrespect to those who have engaged in the military. I have nothing but respect for those people. It's not for me to critique their experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. Nikki, I want to give you a moment. How do you define patriotism, and what would you like to add to this conversation about holding these competing ideas in our minds at the same time?
Thank you. And I also just want to say how I'm so grateful to learn and hear the amazing words of the fellow colleagues here who are featured on this call. And I want to kind of dive a little bit deeper on what was said about patriotism becoming racialized because it has. And we've seen it since onset, the onset of colonization, you know, when we were labeled as merciless Indian savages, when our people were subjected to Manifest Destiny, the Indian Removal Act, Trail of Tears, and so much more, when we were forced into boarding schools. And we see this today through continued erasure, misrepresentation, and mascots, inaccurate histories our children are forced to in school. And an example that I see very clearly, I had to learn every single United States president, but my peers could not name a single one of my war chiefs. And I think about how we are continued to be thought of as, anti-American or we're not patriotic. But the reality is, we just want equity. We want visibility. We aren't seen for who we are as humans, and we're continued to be looked at as subhuman and less than. And we're reminded of that when we see the Declaration of Independence, three words for the entire world to hear and see, merciless Indian savage. And, you know, I think it's society in general that continues to erase us and continues to define who we are. But I also really want to build on what else was said about when we reflect more on our resilience and the strong foundation and the strong shoulders that we are setting for the next generation, I am incredibly hopeful that our children and our children's children, you know, their battles are going to be looking so much different than ours when it comes to equity and visibility in American society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that rolls out, you know, whether it's through protests, through people serving in office, you know. Well, we're talking about patriotism today. If you want to get in on the conversation, there's still time. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm senior producer Monica Brain, and we are talking about patriotism, 4th of July today. And we want to hear your opinion. Are you celebrating the 4th of July this weekend? And what do you think about the term merciless Indian savages being in the Declaration of Independence? Everybody's welcome to the conversation. Even folks who, if you don't share the same opinion as our guests, we want to hear from you. Call us, 1-800-996-2848. Let's take a call. We've got Bernice in Turtle Mountain, tuned in on KEYA. Hey, Bernice, thanks for listening. And what do you want to share?
I want to say that Mario Gonzalez and, she would kill me. Another a professor, Native American professor, wrote a book called The Politics of Hallowed Ground, and they talked about the history of Natives in the military. And the first Natives went to war for the United States under World War I, but they weren't citizens of the United States. They went to war under the treaties because the treaties were peace treaties first. So we have that history. We also know that a war doesn't care what color you are. And when people are characterizing now being patriotic as, you know, whatever, attacking the Capitol or whatever, I don't know. I think that when you see things going on like that, you have to decide what your part of it's going to be. And when I look at organizations, you know, I've been a tribal attorney for a long time, but now I've become the state president of the VFW Auxiliary for North Dakota. So I think when you look at these organizations, you have to think about, are you going to try to make change from within the organization? Are you going to try to make change from outside? So here I am in the middle of this, what is a patriotic organization, whatever individual people take that to mean. But my part of it is, I think, that holding your government accountable is also as patriotic as, you know, celebrating the red, white, and blue and all of that. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah. Bernice, thank you so much. That's great. Nikki, I wanted to give you a moment. I know that you wrote something that it sort of says a similar thing, that that you can love your country and also ask them to do better. And I wonder if you might expand on that.
Sure. So I wrote a piece last year called Merciless Indian Savage that acknowledges and kind of gives a little bit of education about the history of Indigenous people on a very high level, but then also talks about, you know, Native people serve the military, you know, within the highest rate. My grandmother was the first Native woman to be in the United States Marine Corps for our community. And I come from a long line of veterans who, like the caller had just said, had fought for our country before they were even granted the rights of citizenship. But it's because we have a love for the land and a love of our people and a desire to continue to protect our land and protect our people. And I think that maybe that's what makes us patriotic. Maybe that's just a term that is unfamiliar to us as Native people. But I'll also say that, you know, we're also reminded of this when we go to powwows, tribal powwows and cultural celebrations that happen during the 4th of July. We see this during flag songs, victory songs, veteran songs. And it's a reminder to us that Native people have served the military and armed forces at the highest rates of any other ethnic group, including world wars. And so I also wrote about that as well. Additionally, I had spoken recently on a Soledad O'Brien piece on citizenship and identity. And I think that we just really need to emphasize our resiliency because that's who my grandma fought so hard for me to be resilient. And I remember hearing very vividly grandpa speaking in Alaska recently, telling young people, do not be afraid of our culture and our traditional ways of knowing. Grandpa went through things so we don't have to. And so it's our responsibility to honor our grandparents, our veterans, those who fought for us, whether it's in a war, whether it's surviving or fighting for our culture, whether it's fighting for the land. It's our responsibility now to continue to fight for our people. And though our battles and things may be different, we still have the responsibility to fight for a better future for our next generation.
Agreed. Christina, anything else you want to add to that? I'm particularly thinking about, like, you know, sitting down with an elder talking about, you know, the importance of being patriotic or of putting the flag out. Or maybe they said the Pledge of Allegiance every single day in school, and, you know, how you carefully navigate through a conversation like that.
I guess thinking about what's been said previously, I just have to say you also have to look at the history of when our people were and continue to obviously disproportionately serve in the military. But you're looking at a population in the early 1900s heavily impacted by boarding school policy, children taken away from their homes, being recruited within the boarding school residential system. You have are people coming back from participating in military service and already had been displaced through boarding school and then being gone, and then they come back to the community, and that led to another assimilation policy, the relocation program. So you have to look at it within the historical context of all the different policies, Indian policies. So, you know, maybe people weren't so much as patriotic as really needed a source of income at the time when our livelihoods were being destabilized as Indigenous people. So I don't know if it was so much benevolence as a response to the times.
I like that. That being said,
yeah. So I would, as she said, go even deeper and look at the time period. And I don't see as many Native people, I could be wrong, participating in military service anymore, because I think as we become we have more opportunities, we're going to do, you know, take different opportunities, and maybe that looks like college for some. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have to be really critical of romanticizing patriotism.
Definitely. Christina, you know, it's funny, I'm thinking about this, and it's, you know, it's like, are you telling me the 4th of July is so much more than just fireworks and cake and family get-togethers, you know, like, can we still sit together at the table and enjoy each other's company without, you know, going through the entire, you know, tragedy of our past?
Yeah. And, you know, no disrespect, you know, let Indigenous people do if they want to have a barbecue and get together with their family. I mean, no more power to them. I mean, you know, I think everybody has a way of dealing as Indigenous people with being quote unquote American. And I'm not here to critique that or my elders or my grandparents' experience either, you know.
Plus, the barbecues are pretty good. And I love to see my family. All right. Well, let's take some calls. We got Bucky in Hopi, Arizona, tuned in on KUII. Hey, Bucky, we're getting close to the end of the hour. What would you like to share?
Thank you for taking my call first. And I really appreciate what the women mostly, again, it's women, you know, it's been for me to see. I've gone a lot of places in this United States. And it's women taking the forefront of, you know, speaking out for our Indigenous peoples. I'm not putting men down, but, you know, everywhere I go, I see these women. And thank you, women, you know, for being the life givers and stepping up. I just wanted to say that, you know, I am a Hopi, you know. I don't know what it means to be an American because I was raised that way. And we have a deep tradition and culture where, you know, it's very religious and it's very complex and complicated. And you have to have your heart into it to where it takes prayer, having faith and belief, and most of all, humility. And it's not easy to understand who we are as Indigenous people. You have to live it. You have to do the work. And there needs to be a lot of discussion on this to really educate our young people, because the Americas have taken a lot away from who we are as Indigenous people. We are no longer who we are because of the things that are easy to receive and buy with the money and, you know, jobs, all these kinds. It's good, but it's bad at the same time. You have to balance these things. But there's a lot of things in our Indigenous ways that we got to educate our own people properly. And it takes a lot of prayer and meditation to bring our people together, because we're all scattered right now. But people don't like to admit to that because they haven't settled down to really ask themselves, who am I? Where am I? Where am I going? How do I change my life? You know, all these questions should always be to self, and we're not doing those things. These are just words that I'm saying that come from my ancestors, my elders, you know, and it's very important that we go back to those ways to really understand who we are as Indigenous peoples. And it's very religious to where life is the number one thing that we do all our sacred ritual ceremonies for. For nothing else. You know, they call us environmentalists and activists, but that's just, you know, somebody giving us a name. But what we're really doing is we're saving the world. We got to teach the world that we have to stand up against climate change, polluting the waters and the land and the hole getting bigger in the ozone layer. All these things we need to educate ourselves on, because it's very important, and it's up to us Indigenous people to do that.
Mm, yeah, I agree with you, Bucky. Absolutely. Thank you so much for those good words. We really appreciate it. Let's take one more call. We've got Jay in Minneapolis, tuned in on KSRM. Hey there, Jay. What would you like to share?
Hey, I was just going to kind of even echo the last caller in that, like, patriotism is like a very secular way of, and it is a distraction, right? Because it's like an ends to, or ways to an end, a means to an end. It's like, how do we convince people to continue generational poverty? Oh, we make it so that it's a patriotic thing to do these certain things or to take these taxes and to serve your country in this way. And it's something that completely separates us from the land, from people as like holistic beings. It pits people against each other, and it's so very malleable. And so you don't get to, like, patriotism, I feel like, is such a pigeonhole for, like, fighting and for confrontation. And if you don't preserve what's around you and you actually fight for the land, then you're going to, patriotism doesn't matter, right? You're going to lose your land. You're going to lose the ability to breathe or to swim or to drink.
Mm.
So I think it's just a distraction, really, that allows for this continual systemic racism, systemic violence to make you feel like you are supposed to be contributing to something when really it's like the most self-harming thing that people can do, right? Is to not question their government, not question the people who are coming into your neighborhood saying that they're going to protect you and are really taking lives. Mm. You know, it's a hard pill to swallow. It's, you know, even just, I'm an international transracial adoptee, and I'm Native South American. But because of things like patriarchy, patriotism, same difference, I wasn't allowed to have my ancestry. I don't know that part of me because I had to just assimilate, right? I had to go and be naturalized, which is such a difficult word to grapple with, but that's what it's called.
Yeah,
I was unnatural before.
Jay, thank you so much. We're getting at the end of the hour, and I want to give our guests a chance to wrap up. But thank you for your comments and your words. I appreciate it. Dr. Danette Dale, we covered a lot today. I'm wondering if you have some final thoughts.
I just want to say that I consider myself to be someone who comes from a long tradition of resistance. Our Indigenous people, like Danette, have just done so much to let us know about how long we've resisted, and that resistance also includes considering ourselves to be citizens of an imperialist settler nation. And it's way past time for us to start thinking about our own places as distinct peoples who belong to a distinct Indigenous nations. Patriotism is an emotion. It's something that's fomented to make you not realize just how racialized and how this country is established on the dispossession of Indigenous people and the labor of Black slavery, as well as the labor of immigrants. All people who aren't Indigenous are immigrants or descendants of immigrants.
Yeah, that's interesting. Nikki, anything you want to finish off with?
Yeah, you know, I pulled up another piece that we asked a Native youth to write. And so if it's okay, I would like to read her words. Her name is Autumn Adams. She's from the Yakama Nation, champion for change for the Center for Native American Youth, and one of our youth leaders. And she had to describe what the 4th of July was to her little sister who she's raising. And so she writes, "I remind my little sister that we are descendants of strong and powerful leaders who survived genocide. I know that I am a generation of change, and it is my responsibility to clear a path for my little sister and the future generations. I remind my little sister that we are more than stereotypes. We are a generation of authors, veterinarians, professors, lawyers, engineers, directors, CEOs, presidents, social workers, and change makers. We will continue to reclaim our independence. And I do that with every conversation I have with my little sister. While the 4th of July is a federal holiday, to me, it is a reminder of our resiliency and the bright future that we can shape together."
Wow. Well said. Thank you so much to our guests, Dr. Christina M. Castro, Dr. Jennifer Danette Dale, and Nikki Petrie. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our host is Tara Gatewood. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Marino Spencer is the engineer. Nola Daves Moses is the distribution director, and Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. And Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer for National Native News. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. Have a good weekend.
Looking to get your high school diploma? Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute offers Native Americans ages 18 or older training and preparation courses for the high school equivalency diplomas, in person and online, beginning September 6th. This no-charge program includes testing fees and other resources will be available to help with supplies and living expenses. Space is limited. Application deadline is August 6th. More by calling 505-382-4287 or at sipi.edu, who support this show.
Bonjour. Gunawena moshkia ya agbao dominawad, jimino kunayewad minawa, jibindage biagazawad, jidabaige sigwana nanda wiendwa. Mawadishuane insurekidsnow.gov. Gemaganoj 1-877-KIDS-NOW. Gawandinagadeg the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.